despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito.
12:20, Carney Show. Welcome back. Last broadcast of the year. It is Friday, December 29th. Dazzling Danny D, as he was aptly named by the late, great Ron Ells, who doesn't know he's late yet because no one's had the heart to tell him. Been a while, Danny. Longtime music critic, not just for me, but for The Post and Gun for Hire, Neil Young books, other books, encyclopedias on music, the end-all, be-all on the subject matter. Joining us in the studio. Happy New Year, buddy.
Well, how wonderful to be back on your show and actually in the studio, which so it's a rare treat for me. So thanks for having me.
We have not done this in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And you were the only correspondent that I had on the show for years, and this was up the dial a little bit back when that place was relevant, that wouldn't go out and drink with me after the show. Like Holloman, you know, we do the show, and, you know, 18 hours later, we were still in a pub somewhere. But you never went with us.
You know, I decided about, I don't know, 25 years ago that drinking was an occupational hazard for somebody that hung out in bars for a living, like listening to music, and there's a bar inevitably there. And I just decided, I'm going to bypass the bar and pay attention to the music, and maybe I'll make a few bucks.
That realization is yet to come to me.
Yeah.
Some point. Some point. All right, we came in with a song called Despacito, which I assume ties into our conversation about 2017 in music. And I have no idea.
Yeah, no, well, I'll tell you, it really was kind of the song of the year. Definitely the song of the summer. I mean, I hate that term. It seems to have become a thing in the last few years. Well, what's the song of the summer? Well, this was indisputably it. It was a number one hit on the charts for 17 weeks this year. So that's longer than any other song was number one. And the significant thing about it is it's mostly sung in Spanish. There's a remix that's got Justin Bieber on it singing in English, but it's primarily a Spanish language song.
Who is it?
It is Luis Fonsi.
Yeah.
And so that is a major coup because, I mean, there's only been two other songs that have reached number one on the charts in Spanish.
The Macarena?
That's one. Very good.
Feliz Navidad.
No.
I give me a minute. We'll just get, I'll come
okay.
up.
Okay, but anyway.
Is it in Spanish?
Yes. Other song other than the Macarena, Los Del Rio. And it was 1987. I can give you that.
Is it a woman?
Nope.
Oh, so that leaves out Gloria Estefan.
La, la, la,
bingo. He's got it. Very good.
I'm impressed.
The Los Lobos version.
Do we each get a prize?
I'll see what I got in my bag.
Okay.
Might be like a bottle of water or something.
It's quite a bag.
Possibly a business card.
Quite a bag you're sporting there.
Yeah.
And it is kind of a big deal, though, when you think about it.
Well, and I mean, it signifies several things. One is sort of the triumph of the internet and streaming because, you know, now it's not so, boy, I hate to say this on a radio station, but it's not as dependent on terrestrial radio anymore.
Get out!
Sorry about that.
What it tells me is we got to get this wall up fast.
Yeah.
Because it's Mexican music.
I'm telling you, a wall's not going to solve this problem.
Right.
And it just shows the popularity of Spanish language music in America now.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to continue to be a thing. And also, so like I said, on this track, you have Justin Bieber getting in on the remix. You know, he like heard the song and he's like, wow, that's a great song. I want to get in on this somehow. So you have other artists now, Beyonce, Demi Lovato, Flo Rida, Post Malone, all these other folks are getting in. They're collaborating with Spanish language artists doing these remixes and thus getting a big hit out of it. So it's really going to become a more significant thing in the coming year. So there's kind of a wave of this type of thing coming.
And Gloria Estefan kind of like paving part of the way for that with
certainly
Miami Sound Machine, and she just got a Kennedy Center honors.
I mean, even somebody like that, it was always a significant thing when all of a sudden she would finally do her Spanish language album. You know, before that, pretty much had to sing in English. But then by the time she was an established star, now you see that turned on its head. Artists that are just kind of starting out are getting their first hits in America. they are going right ahead and starting out singing in Spanish.
Dan Durkholz with us, and we start with the National Front with that song Despacito as being kind of the tune of the year. So why don't we stick with the national scene for a bit, and then we would come back after the break. Then we'll look more into the local things and concerts and stuff like that. But certainly passings. I know every year we lose a lot of people, but it certainly feels like we really took it on the chin this year musically.
The last couple of years have really been tough. Just, I mean, not to be insensitive to anybody, but I think a large number of people feel it more when it's somebody who's like a big star. Last year we had Bowie, we had Prince. And this year, some of the significant ones here, certainly locally in the St. Louis area, Chuck Berry, you can't discount his influence on world culture.
Right.
Here's a little Chuck, I guess.
Might have even been a bigger hit had he recorded it in Spanish.
Today, that's actually true. But he was 90. I mean, it's not like that was unexpected. I think what was shocking this year, there were a lot of deaths that were very unexpected. Both people dying by their own hand, Chris Cornell of Soundgarden, Chester Bennington of Linkin Park, Butch Trux of the Allman Brothers. You know, those are all tragic cases where they ended their own life. But then other folks who just died of you know, other causes, like Tom Petty, who I think that was finally, well, it was cardiac arrest is what that was. And I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, and I'd seen a couple postings from people online saying they had just seen him a few nights before in concert, and he was sounded great.
Yeah, he did. I mean, they did their 40th anniversary tour, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and they played here in St. Louis, and I went to that show and reviewed it, and I remember saying that, you know, it seemed like he had lost a step a little bit physically, but I don't think what anybody knew was apparently he had a severely damaged hip and had not had surgery on that at this point. I don't know whether that eventually played into what happened. I mean, I don't know the extent of his health problems. He kept it very close to the vest, obviously. So so that was a real surprise. And I mean, Petty was such a rock and roll icon. You know, I try to not use that word very often because it definitely gets overused these days. But he was. I mean, he's been in the business since, you know, the early 70s, I guess, with his first band, and then with the Heartbreakers since the mid-70s. And I mean, what a amazing career he had. So that was rough to have to say goodbye to that.
And I don't know what the numbers are, but he easily had a dozen hits, maybe two dozen top tens. Do they even classify things that way anymore?
Well, they do. I don't know off the top of my head how many he had, but I mean, certainly when you look to his like greatest hits albums and stuff like that, I mean, they're voluminous hits. And just otherwise, even if they weren't chart hits, they were just songs that everybody knew.
And you and I talked about Peter Bogdanovich's documentary.
Yeah, it's a really terrific. I don't know, it came out, what, maybe, I don't know how many years ago. It's
7 or 8 years ago, yeah. And it took me 3 sittings to get through it, because it's like 4 or 5 hours, but it is worth every minute, because there's very early footage of his band out of Florida when he was with Mudcrutch. And just as an aside, and I don't want to go careening too far out of the way, but I wanted to get to this with you, and I forgot. Musical documentaries, even if you're not a fan of the band Rush, there's a documentary on Rush on Amazon, or like, those are the only two I have, so it's one of those, where they've got footage of Alex Lifeson, the guitar player, at 16 years old, 15 years old, sitting at the table with his family and telling his parents, I'm going to drop out of high school and pursue this music thing. And the fact that it's not a reenactment And it's really the footage of him telling his parents he's going to try to make music, and they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It was astounding to me. There's some great documentaries out there.
Oh, absolutely. And all of the members of Rush, thankfully, still with us. So that's a good thing. But yeah, there's a lot of great stuff. Kind of what's causing that these days is bands are looking for other revenue streams.
Right.
Records are not selling as much as they used to be. CDs or, you know, whatever kind of physical media, downloads. Even Apple is apparently looking at ending downloads sometime next year is what I've read.
Wow.
And that will be a huge seismic shift in the business. But I mean, think about it. Like if you bought your kid, maybe not specifically your kids, but some kind of musical item over, you know, this Christmas, let's say, was it more likely a CD or was it a subscription to, say, Spotify or something like that? I mean, more folks are going in that direction, and streaming is really becoming king now. I think the New York Times reported something like streaming was up 59% this year, and 80% of all music consumption was done via streaming. So that's just an amazing.
It's sad to me.
It is sad, and it's like leasing a car rather than buying it.
Yep.
You know, at the end of the day, when you stop paying for your subscription, you don't have any of that music anymore.
Yeah, or, I mean, in some cases, they can pull that stuff away. I know that's happened with Amazon's books.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, they decided, oh, we don't want that out there.
Well,
anymore? They took it back and gave you a refund or something like that. They can do that. That is the digital age now.
Liner notes, too. I mean, that was always a very big part of things for me. And you ever try to seed a bud on your MP3 player? You just can't do it. 12:32, Dan Durkholz with us, and let's talk more on the national scene. Any other passing? Certainly Greg Allman of note.
Oh, gosh. I mean, there were so many. Just, you know, titans of the business. Greg Allman, Walter Becker. I mean, I know you and are both huge Steely Dan fans. And the inevitable thing that happens after somebody dies is then the legal battle starts. Whether it's Glenn Campbell leaving some of his kids out of the will.
Right.
Oh, that's a nasty surprise that everybody, you know, gets afterwards. Now there's apparently some sort of lawsuit that's going between Donald Fagen and the estate of Walter Becker. Apparently they put in some kind of clause where if something were to happen to one of them, the other would be able to buy out their interest in the band. Well, now I don't know if I have that exactly right, but something like Becker's family is disputing Fagen's right to take the name Steely Dan, because of course if he tours as Steely Dan, the payoff is much bigger than if he tours as Donald Fagen. So that would be the reasoning behind that.
We all just get along, people?
Yeah. But just a couple other ones real quick. Malcolm Young from AC/DC.
He's been out of the band.
He's been out of the band because he was battling dementia,
right?
Much like Glenn Campbell
had
been. But still, I mean, really, when people have looked back on it and thought about it, one of the great rhythm guitar players in rock and roll history. So his passing deserves being mentioned. Fats Domino, again, not unexpected in his case. I mean, he was 89, I believe.
Right.
His name was Fats.
Well, for a guy named Fats, that's a pretty good run. Is 89. So
I believe vertically challenged Domino is politically correct.
Mm. And another one that was very emotional, especially up north of the border, Gord Downie from the band Tragically Hip died of brain cancer. And he is it's impossible to explain to somebody who doesn't know the Tragically Hip how big they are in Canada. I mean, it was almost like a national day of mourning when he passed. He for years and years, he has been a huge star in Canada, and that was very tough. They did like a final show that was webcast, and it was so emotional. And he passed away. Troy Gentry from Montgomery Gentry died in a helicopter crash. Jay Giles of the Jay Giles Band passed away this year, and Grant Hart from Husker Du. So it's been a rough year, but I mean, you know, it's only going to get tougher because, you know, as we go on every year, I mean, a lot of the great stars of rock and roll, they're getting up there in age.
And it's never Keith Richards.
Somehow.
Which is so weird.
It is stunning. It really
is. It's never Keith Richards. I believe it was the late Bill Hicks, who said, you know, post-apocalyptic Earth will leave cockroaches and Keith Richards. Dan Durkholtz, our music man, alongside. We haven't gotten to local, some of the best concerts in his estimation and his favorite music, personally, for 2017. Much to do. Carney Show, our last one of 2017. A flashback and some folks that work with Mary Tyler Moore. But their thoughts, Carl Reiner, Dick Van Dyke. Also, our classics continue. One of our favorite chats of 2017 was with PJ O'Rourke. We will share that with you a bit later on. Tom O'Keefe takes us to the movies next hour. This hour, it's music. Dan Durkholtz is along, and we'll get into some of the best of the best. And we are listening to what here, young man?
This is Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, a song called I Need Never Get Old. And he played Lou Fest this year. He was one of the headliners of Lou Fest. And my line about this in the review was he would have blown the roof off the dump had it not been an outdoor concert.
There would not have been.
It was, but it was that good. I mean, it was one of those things where everyone just seemed to almost like levitate. You know, it was a really hot show, which is amazing because I'd seen him, I don't know, a couple of years ago at the Ready Room, and I just thought, well, I mean, the record's great, but I didn't think the show was great. And this time, wow, they've been working out, and
so
he's been working out.
What makes for a really hot show to a music critic like yourself?
I mean, you know, it's hard to say exactly what it is, but I mean, the band was, they were like James Brown tight. You know,
right.
And he was even doing like some James Brown footwork. And if you know what Nathaniel Rateliff looks like, that's an unlikely thing to have happen.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And I don't know. I mean, the songs were there. They actually did. There was a Chuck Berry tribute at Lou Fest also, which was really terrific. I mean, they put this thing together and a lot of great guest stars. And Nathaniel Rateliff couldn't make it that first night of Lou Fest. So he actually did his own little thing because he's actually on the record, the Chuck record that just came out last year, just right after Chuck died. And so he brought out Charles Berry Jr., I think it was.
Right.
And so they wound up doing a little Chuck tribute in his own set. So, it, you know, it had local tie-in, and Rateliff himself is actually from Herman, Missouri. So so it had a little bit of a homecoming feel to it. And, yeah, so on my list of favorite concerts of the year, there will be a list. I believe it's going to be in the Post-Dispatch sometime, maybe in the next week or so. I'm not sure when they're doing it. And on stltoday.com, that one is my second favorite show of the year.
And is there a new album, too?
No, I think they're working on one.
Right.
I think they did a couple of new songs that I had not heard before. But yeah, so I think that'll be happening in the new year for him.
So you take us down the road of favorite shows. Let's talk about more of those. What else really blew your socks out?
Well,
this year?
My favorite show of the year, I know they're a favorite of yours, Sigur Rós, the Icelandic trio.
Oh, God, who?
Yeah, Sigur Rós. They're actually, if you look them up online, they're actually in the middle of, I don't know if it's still going on, but they do a big festival in Iceland right now with some of their friends. And imagine playing a big festival right now. It's a little chilly. You think it's cold here? It's really chilly.
Iceland's green and Greenland's ice.
No.
I never did figure that out.
No, not exactly. But, I mean, their music, if you want to put it in sort of geological terms, is really, I mean, it really represents Iceland. It's kind of a cliche to say it, but it's really much fire and ice. I mean, that is the way their sound is. They sing in Icelandic, you know, so there's a little bit tough there in terms of the... do we have some?
I heard this in the IKEA store.
Well,
so those drums, or they got Michael Flatley working behind them?
I mean,
with his feet mic'd.
Yeah, it's and I will say that the stage show was just amazing. They did some very technologically forward looking things. with like scrims coming down and making some of the effects on stage appear almost as if you were looking at a 3D movie or something. It was very, very unusual. And then you add Yanzi, the lead singer, his falsetto vocals. It's a magical thing. I mean, I know I say this looking forward to being made fun of by you,
Danny. Not why you're here,
but I'm telling you, it was a mind blowing concert, and that was my favorite concert of the year.
Where was it?
It was at the Peabody. Oddly, a lot of my favorite shows this year were at the Peabody. Somehow, I wound up there an awful lot. John Prine.
Yeah,
that was another one, and he did a show. There was an interesting moment there because, of course, it is the Peabody Opera House now, associated with the Peabody Coal Company. I hope they're not a sponsor.
No, we don't have any sponsors.
Because he sang his song about what's it called, the Muhlenberg County song, oh my gosh! I'm a paradise. It's called Paradise.
He does that nice.
No, this was is strictly in English. The song is called Paradise, and it's a song about his family's ancestral home in Kentucky being destroyed by the Peabody Coal Company.
Oh,
and they sang that, and they didn't do it just for us. I mean, it's been in his show all year,
right.
But it was kind of the encore of the show.
Did he say something about
it? Didn't say anything. I don't think needed to.
Right.
So it was just that was an interesting moment. I was kind of always waiting for something like that to happen, and then by God, it happened. So
you have on your list honorable mention best shows of the year, Sting.
Yes.
I forgot he played at the pageant.
He played at the pageant, which was a huge coup for them to bring Sting into a small venue like that. So that was a really special night. And, you know, I mean, that's always fun when you can see somebody in a venue that's not exactly made for that sort of thing. Lucinda Williams, a terrific Americana singer-songwriter, played a show at the Contemporary Art Museum that also was a very special night. Like 300 people managed to get into that. So,
are house concerts still a thing?
Yeah, sure.
Because I used to get invited to them. I guess people just figured, well, he's not coming. He's too old for this.
There's actually, I mean, like a few have sprouted up around town. There was kind of one that was going on for quite a long time over in Clayton. Rick and Nancy Wood kind of started this thing out some years ago, and there have been some other ones that have popped up here and there as well. So it's a good thing for the artists because they actually get to, you know, they probably sell more merch at those things, more CDs and T-shirts and whatever, than they do at some bigger shows. And they get all of the money that's collected goes to them. Like, the people can't make any money on that or else they would get in trouble with the tax collector and so forth. So it really winds up, and it's such a special night, you know, for fans. I didn't get to as many of those as I would like to, but those are really terrific if you get a chance to go to one.
All right, other favorites in 2017?
Well, I mentioned Tom Petty earlier. That was a terrific show, and it didn't feel like a last hurrah for him. And also, St. Louis had a lot of big concerts, a lot of stadium concerts this year. Metallica at Busch Stadium, which I did not go to. I'm kind of glad I missed that one because it was raining all night. So that's not much fun at an outdoor concert. But apparently it was a great show anyway. And Billy Joel, which I did attend, was really terrific, despite all odds. I mean, the guy has not made a new record of pop songs since 1993, I believe.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And he's still, you know, he's still selling out Madison Square Garden once a month.
Yeah.
And then taking this thing on the road and selling out stadiums. And it was a terrific show. I mean, it was just what you want from a Billy Joel show. And that was, if you remember, that was a tense week also, because that was the week where U2 had canceled and Ed Sheeran had canceled, you know, in the wake of the verdict as, you know, and, So Billy Joel actually did go on, and I think that was a really good thing. I think we needed to get back on track after those cancellations.
Are both of those, the Ed Sheeran and the U2, have those been reslated for 2018?
Well, no. I mean, the U2 was canceled outright because that was the Joshua Tree tour where they were doing the anniversary of their Joshua Tree album. And they are coming back, though, and they're going to come back to Scottrade instead of the Dome, which is where they were going to play. The Joshua Tree tour just would have sold more tickets. It was a, like a bigger event or something. And on this new one, they're going to be playing songs from their new album.
Which is going to forcibly show up in my iTunes library again.
And similarly, Ed Sheeran, he's coming back, but he's going the other direction. He's going to be playing Busch Stadium next year, which, I mean, good for this guy. It was, I mean, it was a big year for Ed Sheeran. You know, we talked about those number one hits. He had one as well. And with the song Shape of You. And Noel Gallagher from Oasis had a very funny interview online just recently. And he pointed out, he's like, what's this guy's overhead? You know, I mean, nothing. He just goes around with an acoustic guitar and nothing, like a few pedals on the floor, you know, that, that he uses. And he sells out stadiums and he gets all the money.
Yeah.
So nice work if you can get it. Well done, Ed Sheeran.
I've been a big fan for a long time. And I think the first time he really turned my head in a big way was the Songs in the Key of Something TV special they did for the music of Stevie Wonder and Ed Sheeran, acoustic guitar only and some pedals, did a loop thing, and I can't remember what the song is offhand, but blew me away. And I've seen him do that with Shape of You and some other songs where it's just him and he's layering music on top of each other and playing it all live, just him. And it just, he's amazing.
You know, on the one hand, it seems like a parlor trick, but he's actually turned out, you know, made a pretty solid living out of it. One other show I wanted to mention that was big for me this year was Guns N' Roses at the Dome. And so, you know, 26 years later, I finally got to see a complete Guns N' Roses show.
Yeah, and not have a police escort out of the, you were at the first one, weren't you?
I was, oh, yes.
Good times.
That's a whole, that's, we could do a whole thing on that. But let's not.
My tie to that, I wasn't at that show, but the guy that took the picture of Axl that caused him to jump off stage and punch the guy in the face, I've known since high school.
Really?
And Axl came into town when the smoke cleared, literally, and said, all right, how do we make this go away? I'll buy you a car. You tell me what kind of car you want. He got some money, too. But Axl said, I'll buy you any kind of car you want. And he chose a Saturn. So apparently Axl hit him pretty hard.
Also, the great thing about this show was Rich Fortis, who's been in the band for a long time. Yeah, St. Louis guy. Finally got to play a hometown show with the big band. And I got to see him for just a little bit after that show. And you could tell how much that meant to him to finally get a chance to play with Guns N' Roses here in St. Louis. So if only for that, it was a very special night. And actually, I mean, it was a good show, too. So, so that was one of my favorites. There were others. There were, you know, other big shows that I did not make it to. Chance the Rapper did a great show at Scott Trade.
In Icelandic, which you haven't lived till you've heard Icelandic rap.
Yeah.
Favorite album? Do you have a favorite album of the year, period?
Favorite album of the year. What is my favorite album of the year? I used to know.
You know, you had to know it was going to come up.
Yeah, I did know it was going to come up. Oh, yes. Sorry. I blanked there for a second.
You come to these rehearsals.
Well, it's an album by a woman named Rhiannon Giddens. She used to be a singer in the Carolina Chocolate Drops, and she's also a MacArthur Genius Grant recipient. And also recipient of the Steve Martin Award because she plays a mean banjo as well. And she did this record this year called Freedom Highway. And one of kind of the subtexts of this year was, you know, music that responded to roots and to race because it's been such at the forefront of the national conversation these days. What she did was she went back and she read some books, some old texts that had slave stories in them relating, you know, to her, you know, her past and her family's past and so forth. And she turned them into some really terrific songs. And she also like updated some songs from the civil rights movement. Freedom Highway is a song. Actually, St. Louis and B. Beeman is on that track on the album. So it's a really amazing record called Freedom Highway by Rhiannon Giddens. Another one of my favorites is by a guy named Father John Misty, an album called Pure Comedy. And people find him a little bit too much to take. He's kind of too clever by half for some people. I think he's really smart and really funny. I mean, you have to sort of pay attention to get the jokes, and he's got a great voice too. And then a guy just who crossed all of my lists is a guy named Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit with a record called The Nashville Sound. He's an Americana artist, and he's kind of taken the wreck of his life. He was like a really bad alcoholic, and his last three records have kind of found him coming out of the haze of alcoholism and into a relationship with another artist, Amanda Shires, who tours with him sometimes, and they actually played here twice this year. And so it's just an amazing record, and I think we might actually have a little Jason to go out with. So those were some of my favorites. There are many others, but those are the ones I can name for you right now.
Always enjoy your scribings, Danny, and your company, too. Enjoy the family, and we look forward to spending some time with you in 18.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, pal. Thank you much. That Dan Dierkholtz. We'll be back after the news.
I've sang enough about myself. So if you're looking for some bad news, you can find it somewhere else.